Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lorddgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload to that once a week, once every other week, just kind of depending upon the kickboxing schedule. Of course, we've been super busy in kickboxing of late, so you've heard from me a little bit more lately. The other way to listen to the podcast, which is the most efficient way as far as I'm concerned, is just to go to the iTunes search engine, enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my podcast pops right up. Please forgive me in advance. Little bit of a sore throat been dealing with in this holiday season, even though I live in Texas, where there's a little bit sporadic down here. It gets cold sometimes, it gets warm sometimes. But if it's coming out in my recording, I do apologize. But I definitely wanted to give you guys a breakdown after we had such a big weekend in kickboxing. I want to go ahead and just start off with the importance of what happened at Glory 36, which of course went down in Germany. The reason why I wrote a write-up on liverkick.com. I sent it to them. They have not posted it as of the time I'm recording this, but I sent a write-up on it. But I'll go ahead and give you guys my heart of what I feel, why that date was so important. For those of you guys who were following me on Twitter, this is usually the weekend that we watch the K1 World Grand Prix. And then the winner of the K1 World Grand Prix, sometimes they ask them to turn around and fight on the first, you know, of the month. It's kind of, on New Year's Eve. So it's always been a special time of the year for kickboxers and kickboxing. I've really been excited about the various kickboxing organizations making money and staying consistent throughout the years. You know, Kunlun's newer, but they've been doing a really good job of late. And Infusion, they've been, you know, holding strong and doing better every year. Super Combat just got a TV deal in U.S. just the other day. There are long-standing promotions that have been doing work for a long time. So I've always respected what kickboxing has done, despite the fact that the K1 name isn't what it used to. As I said before, the 10th is usually the weekend, you know, that we do the K1 World Grand Prix. And I'm used to staying up really late and watching the show. It usually starts like 2 a.m., you know, my time, and usually finishes at like 7 a.m. my time. And then I just sleep for a couple hours, and then I figure out the work day. But that's what I did all through the 2000s, you know. And again, I was HDNet didn't get their deal with them until later. So I was doing that off of streams. I would just watch online streams to get a hold of this product that I love so much. I am excited at this period of time right now to tell you guys that as a fight fan, this weekend and this level of card, the talent from top to bottom on Glory 36, it really was something special to behold. It was an amazing, amazing fight card, and it was it ended in a way that, of course, you know, none of us wanted. Clearly, we would have liked a much better, you know, finale. Nobody wanted that card to end in the way that it did. But let me just tell you something. As a fight fan, I really enjoyed that the crowd, the atmosphere, the sellout, the performances by the athletes. It's just, you know, the crowd, sometimes they were into the fight, sometimes they weren't, which I'm completely fine with. But to see the kickboxing world, the Twitter world light up, you know, a lot of people think kickboxing's down because the forms are down. But man, if you look at what happened, or if you look at what was going on Twitter that day, a lot of people were really tuned in and really, really focused in on the, you know, this K1 event, and it was special. Like, I really look at it and say, this was a little bit different day than what we've experienced in kickboxing before. So I want to thank everybody who, you know, was part of making that special. Whether you're watching an online stream, whether you were, you know, tweeting or going back to the forums, or you know, you're doing a podcast this week. Any form, anybody who put the effort in to make the Glory Collision card the special card that it was, definitely shout out to you and thanks. I wanted to say that before I broke into the card, because, man, did it have a lot of exciting things. And I'll go ahead and start off at the top. Normally I go bottom up. This time I'm going to go ahead and jump right into Rico Verheerven versus Badr Hari. This is, as I said before, it was a matchup of kickboxing's biggest star versus kickboxing's best fighter in the heavyweight division. And Rico Verheerven is a guy who I mentioned before. He had a slow start. He was good, inconsistent against some high-level opposition. And then all of a sudden he found a crazy consistency that's just, he got better all the time. He started stopping people all the time. It's just, he really is an entertaining fighter. Combination low kicks too, inside leg, outside leg of both legs, both your lead leg and your rear leg. His boxing IQ, his distance, his defense, he just got better all over. Badahari, KO, you know, artist throughout his whole career, even before he had the weight to be a KO artist. He's always been a guy who's done a great job of really letting them know, really letting his opposition know that despite his wiry frame in his youth, he could crack. And when he was a big muscular guy, he could crack. Badahari, plus the instinct to want to get a guy out of there. Badahari had it. He had those tools. This fight was awesome before the fight even began. You know, the crowd was cheering throughout the day. Anybody who's from Morocco, because they have a huge Moroccan community in Holland, so they made the trip over to Germany. Any Moroccan fighter on the card, there was huge, you know, fanfare for them. And then there was also a good, you know, contingent of Rico followers who were just, they were outstriped. There were more voices for Badahari. But when Rico came out, he had good cheer, plus the fact that he ran sprinting out there that he likes, that he does. I was hyped the moment Rico got in there. And, you know, I kind of had fun on Twitter. I was like, how's the champion going out first? But I've seen that done before where the A-side draw that people feel, they can go out second. And then when they do the announcements, they say the draw first and the champion second. So I've seen that compromise done before. But in this situation, Badahari goes out. Of course, you know how he gets down. He never uses the entrance ramp. He usually goes through the crowd somewhere. And he had a huge mob, a bigger mob than I've seen him have before, following him to the ropes or to the ring. When he gets in the ring, they then got up on the apron and just started yelling and cheering and, you know, singing the Badahari song, which is, you know, shout out to the Badahari song, because how many people, and I'm not just talking about just in combat sports, how many people in sports and in entertainment in general have tried to have their own theme song about them and have it work out? Badahari is the only one that I can think of where he has his own song, his own theme song, and everybody gets, you know, gets hyped for it, and it's his song. I remember there was a K1 event where a guy used his song, and then the guy got knocked out later, and we all thought that it was the justice of the football, of the kickboxing world, that only Badahari can use that song for, you know, his entrance. It's his. It's his identity. You know, it's one of the coolest things. He's always had cool walkout music. He had the French rap song by Booba that one time. So he's always had really cool walkout stuff. But man, what was it? Rick Ross way back in the day. But the Badahari song fits him so well, and it gets you so hyped. And to hear him get in the ring, just stand there, just, you know, looking Rico down with that whole side of the rope, it was nuts. They had to get security to try to help get the people off the stage, get them back into their seats. Not just that, but security really didn't do the best of job. It was Badahari's corner that did the best job of getting them off the apron. As soon as they got them back in the crowd, a fight broke out. They had to take a guy out of there. It was just crazy. And that was before the fight began. Fight begins. Badahari is on point. He's working clean kickboxing, single kicks, movement. He throwing flooring boxing here and there. Rico Hirvonen really played defensive for like the first minute and a half. He looked for a strike here and there, a counter kick here and there, but he's pretty much playing behind. And I think strategically, he was of a mentality that get out of round one. Don't let Badahari have round one. Don't let him have that. Don't make the mistake so he can have that explosive moment. It worked out to him because at the end of the round, I gave round one to Badahari. But the last 30 seconds, 40 seconds of that round, Rico Hirvonen figured him out. He started to get his kickboxing flow. Round two, Badahari still had some moments, but I thought Rico Hirvonen was taking over the fight. I thought he had clean kickboxing. I thought his boxing combos were smooth. I thought that he was finding body kick, low kick. I think he's finding his range. Badahari was starting to slow a little bit. Not to say that he was out of shape, but the activity that he had in round one wasn't there as much in round two. Then all of a sudden, in a really weird moment, I still wasn't able to make out when it happened, Badahari broke his forearm. And the moment that it happened, I took a look at Badahari's face. He walked right over towards Mike, and I knew the fight was over with. And part of me is like, oh, great, I spent $30, and Badahari. That's what I was thinking, you know. He was like, I'm done with this, whatever. But then, you know, I saw the arm injury, and I saw him explain, because he really did put the work in. He wanted to win this fight. We can say whatever we want to about all the fights that he's had before, his performance against Ismail Lant, his performance against Zabit Samadov in the loss. Mentally, you could see that maybe he's a little checked out there, wasn't, you know, fighting his, or wasn't you know, preparing as much, just kind of going out there and getting a check. That wasn't the case here. Badahari put the work in to beat Rico Verheeven. Badahari wanted to beat Rico Verheeven. There would have been nothing better for him than a win by KO. But once that arm was broken, and, you know, he would have had to, you know, go two rounds pretty much with that broken arm and had to figure out how to do things. It's definitely a tougher, in my opinion, it's a tough way for the fight to end for Badahari. I know that it's better, I guess, if you want to say, you know, for a future fight that he didn't, you know, get knocked out or didn't lose a future decision or however you want to put it. It's better in that way. But I thought that the way this ended is really good for a rematch, because it almost shows, like, you can make the argument that Badr was winning the fight before it happened. So that way, when people come around to see it again, their mentality will be, okay, the last time this happened, Badr was in control before the arm thing happened. So this time, Badr's going to get his hands raised. So that comes into it. But Rico Verheeven's skill set really showed up to me in round two, and it showed up at the end of round one as well. That dude can freaking kickbox, and his chin, his awareness, everything is better about him. He was landing clean, consistent, and it's a shame that the fight had to end the way it did, but man, was it hype. It was so exciting watching these guys go out there, watching the fight. The fight was living up to the hype. It was fast, clean kickboxing, and it was a reflection of our generation of kickboxing. Our generation of heavyweight kickboxing has been more technical than it has been slobber knocker. It hasn't been the big wide shots that you could see before. There are fights that you watch in the back of the day, even with fighters that are technical, where they just go bombs away until they get a guy out of there. So Mike Bernardo, for example, he's had fights where I've seen him be really technical, and of course he's got the bite down the mouthpiece, let those, you know, big shots go and get guys out of there. I've seen Jerome LeBenner let his hands go wild and get guys out of there, and I've seen him play it clean and get guys out of there. I've also seen that from, you know, Andy Hook, who's as technical as you can ever want, but I've also seen him just go, you know, a street and start throwing wide shots and knock people out. If you look at some of the KOs that happened in the 90s version of K1, a lot of times you had some big, grueling, wild shot guys who were able to score a KO over the other guy. It wasn't necessarily technical all the time. Our generation of kickboxer, with Badahari, with Rico Verheeven, with, you know, I mean, there's like a Sadiq and Ishmael Lant in there too, but, you know, you look at it on a whole, Hesse Higgins, we really do have these huge, super technical guys. And it's a great reflection of the sport that these athletes get to go out there and, you know, Daniel Guidas and that kind of deal. They get to go out there and reflect a generation that grew up watching technical kickboxing, or maybe their star was in the Max era, the early Max era, and they just got big, so they only knew how to fight technical. This fight was a reflection of technical heavyweight kickboxing that still offered the threat of a KO at any moment. It was a special fight. Unfortunately, it had to end with the arm break, but it was fun. Also, I addressed it to John Joe Rogan. We were tweeting back and forth about this. People were saying that this fight was only big because Badahari was in it. I disagree with that strongly. The reason why I say that is, Hari's been fighting for a while, you know, like it's not like he's been inactive for 5 years and this is the first time he fought somebody. No, he's been fighting for a while. People just haven't cared really that much who he's fought. When he fought Lant, you know, if you weren't a kickboxing fan, you didn't really care. Most people didn't even know about the Zabit Samadov loss. You probably just saw one clip of, you know, Badr just kind of sitting there in the middle of the ring. You didn't actually see the fight, and Badr had already beaten him like three times before that. So when you look at Those fights weren't like this. There wasn't a crowd of people on the ropes going crazy. This was made special because just like K1, Glory right now is considered the biggest brand for kickboxing in the world, for promotion for kickboxing in the world. So when they brought Badr out there to, you know, who had fought for Glory before, fights for Glory for the first time, goes against the Glory champion. I was disappointed. I thought it was going to be a 5-rounder. Turns out it was going to be a 3-rounder, but it didn't matter anyways. Goes in there, fights the best fighter, biggest star, best fighter, biggest promotion. It all works together. John Joe Rogan said perfect storm. All works together. That's how I thought. I didn't even fathom that people were thinking that this was only big because of Badr. People are only saying that because when Rico fought outside of it, when, you know, all of his title defenses, you know, whether it be Anderson Broderick Silva or, you know, Mladen Brestovic, whoever that person was that Rico was fighting, it didn't have this kind of buzz. So when they brought her in and it did have this buzz, people felt that, oh, it's only special because Botter's in it. Don't forget, Botter fought some guys. His fight with Want wasn't special. His fight with Zabit Samadov wasn't special. I'm not saying that those guys aren't good fighters. I'm saying they didn't create what we watched on Saturday, what we watched on December 10th. December 10th was a product of Glory, Badr Hari, Rico Verheerven, and the time and space of not getting a special fight for a very long time. That's why this was put together. That's why this was special. Both of these men should be commended, and I don't want to hear anybody saying anything negative about either guy. Clearly, you could say you want Badr Hari to fight more, but that arm was broke. It was clear. Like, you could visually see it on TV. It's not like he had some injury that you couldn't see. You could see that it was broke. So we are excited that this opportunity happened, and hopefully next year we get this again. Clearly, I'll make that argument, you know, till I'm blue in the face. I still think that it would be really, really cool for Glory to return to a K-1 World Grand Prix model. That way we have this excitement every year, as opposed to this is the first time we really had it in a while. But this is awesome. I'm pretty excited about this, and it should be good. Next fight in the card we're going to talk about, Cedric Dombé gets a, you know, decision. It was a split decision. I thought it was clear anyway, over Nicky Holtzkin. There were some close rounds in there, but I'm glad that Cedric Dombé won. It's crazy because I thought Cedric Dombé was going to beat Johan Kongulo, you know, when he first had his first Glory fight. I thought that he was a star to look out for moving down the road. Didn't happen. That night, the decision didn't go his way, but it didn't stop him. You know, he's fought in the last, you know, I sent this to Liverkick on my write-up. In the last year and a half, I want to say he's fought like 15 times. Between going to China, between fighting in France, he's been fighting a lot. And then the Fang Bian fight, which he should, you know, he actually did win, that's his only loss in that period of time. So he's been going against some pretty solid guys, got a victory over Mirtha Grunhardt, who fought with a lot of emotion in that fight and looked for a KO. And Cedric Dombé played the points game, and he got the win there. Enter Nicky Holtzkin, who he mentioned it after his tweet later. You know, he said he fought 6 weeks ago, and that's true. He just got through fighting. I thought the turnaround was really quick, too. I was grateful for it, but I thought it was quick. He just got through fighting, gets in there. It just, he never got into a second gear. He was able to score in singles here and there. He didn't get into the combination flow that he got when he fought Mirtha that second time. It was a clear, he outscored, he beat Mirtha in areas that people thought that Mirtha would beat him. He's able to have more volume. Like, he had more volume, and it was pretty much a reverse. Nicky Holtzkin had the power shots and, you know, their first bout, and then the second bout, Nicky Holtzkin had the scores, whereas you know, the clean, consistent kickboxing scores, whereas Mirtha was throwing the big shots down the stretch of the fight. Cedric Dombé thought that Nicky Holtzkin might have something for two rounds, and then his conditioning and his activity would give him the later rounds. When Cedric Dombé started off pretty good, some people gave him one and two. Some people gave him two and three. I think, I can't remember clearly off the top of my head, but round four was very clear for Dombé. And I want to say round two was clear for Dombé. So I think some people gave Nicky one and three. But once he got that, you know, that second round, I think a lot of people felt the flow of it would go in his favor because he was kickboxing. Combinations to low kicks, combinations to body kicks to hands, movement. He didn't let Nicky Holtzkin really. Nicky Holtzkin will walk him down, but he didn't rest on the ropes a lot. The thing that got people in barrages, he stopped right before his back was touching the ropes a lot of times, and he looked for a counter. And then when Nicky didn't throw, he would explode into a combination. Whether it all scored or not, didn't matter. But he'd score into a combination, get a low kick, and then move. And then Nicky would have to restart all over again. It took Nicky a while to even start checking some of Cedric's kicks. But Cedric got the offense going. He kept it consistent. He's 24 years old. This young man could be a champion for quite some time. Nicky Holtzkin's ready for the rematch right away, and I heard his contract might be up. So I'm glad that he's interested in re-signing because, I mean, him doing kickboxing and boxing, I mean, he's 34 now, 33, 34. I think that that's what I would like to see him do throughout the rest of his career. I'd like to see him dabble in both. until, you know, if a big opportunity comes in boxing and he wants to leave kickboxing behind for that money, I've got no problem with it. But I'm hoping that Glory is paying him well, and then they're, you know, keeping him in the limelight because he is one of their more recognizable stars. So hopefully they do this again in, you know, Chicago or something like that, because they've got Chicago scheduled. So maybe they can do it again on that card. But great stuff. Cedric Dombey, your champion. I'm down to see him fight anybody. You know, they need more wealth in the welterweight division, so I think they should definitely commit to some tournaments that gives us some new blood, some new names. But Cedric Dombey doing it with Nicky Holtzkin again makes sense to me. Wasn't a great fight, but Jamal Ben Sadiq gets a victory over Ismael Lant. Ismael Lant never got into any kind of kickboxing flow this whole fight. He just looked for a big shot over top, never got it. Jamal Ben Sadiq played counter a lot of times. He showed some of the cleanest kickboxing I've seen from him since he beat, you know, Remy Bonjowski, which was a long time ago. But anytime Lant missed something big, Ben would come back with a combo. He was able to score down in the third. You know, his team was pretty happy for him because this is a big time moment for him. This is the one fight on this card where I was like, all right, I don't know how this got in there. It's not on the pay-per-view portion. I would have been fine if it was, you know, on the card, but I would have picked something different for the pay-per-view portion. As for Lant, he did earn himself a title shot because he had the tournament win. He did win, you know, some single fights after that. I can imagine them taking it from him and giving it to Jamal Ben Sadiq. It's not fair, but, you know, Sadiq's got that Hemmer's Gym connection, so maybe it gives him that opportunity. I wouldn't like it myself, but I understand it. Ismael Lant, still a good quality fighter. You just got to return to your kickboxing ways. You can't just be all looking for that big KO shot. Sadiq gets the win, and I think that makes it 2 in a row for him under Glory now. We're going to go ahead, before I bring up the Tiffany Von Seuss MLW fight, let's go ahead and go through the female tournament. I'll go ahead and say it, and I am a fan of women's kickboxing, and I've been supporting women's kickboxing and Muay Thai for a really long time. I push it forward. If it's legit, I'm going to tell you. If it's not legit, I'm going to tell you. This tournament field was not a great tournament field. We had some injuries. We had people, you know, injury replacements. Some fighters moved. Didn't have the best fighters in the world around the weight class outside of Tiffany Von Seuss. You know, once I saw I was in Mom Barlow, I was like, okay, well, that's what's going to, all roads lead to those two fighting. And then the infusion contract comes into play because they, you know, as you can see, they used Tiffany just, you know, 2 weeks ago or whatever. Infusion used Iman Barlow just a few weeks ago. There's conflict there, and I've known that to happen before. Lion Fight had conflict with Kevin Ross fighting Glory at that period of time. And sometimes you say yes and you sign stuff, but you don't understand, or you don't don't fully understand the limitations of the long-term contract that you have with another promotion, and I think that's what happened here. This is not a case of anybody being afraid of anybody. Tiffany Von Seuss will fight anybody on the planet. Iman Barlow will fight anybody on the planet. It was disappointing that Iman couldn't be in the tournament, but I understood it. But I remember her tweeting. She was excited about the opportunity. I think she thought all systems were go until they hit her up and let her know that this isn't, you know, it's going to have to be a little bit different. We're going to have to move things around. So she's out of the tournament. They decide to go with Amel Debi instead of Anissa Mexen, who, of course, would be the best female fighter on the planet as far as I'm concerned, as far as resume goes. So already you've got, you know, this weight class, you don't have the best girls in it. Like, you don't have the best female fighters in the around the weight class in the tournament. You have an okay tournament that you put together, but I'd say the girls are more serviceable, not elite. Like Isis Verbeek, for example, Iman Barlow's got a victory over her. So it's like, Amel Debi, her first big victory was the one earlier in the tournament, so it wasn't special in that regards, but it was special that the biggest kickboxing promotion has adopted female kickboxing and they are committed to making this thing work down the road. It was special because of that, so who knows, they've got time. Just because this tournament wasn't the great tournament, didn't have a lot of action, didn't have fights that you sit back and you remember. Amel Debi's last fight was the one that I thought that was probably the most entertaining as far as skills go. But it was a pretty forget. Most people don't remember a lot of the fights. I think the only knockdown in the whole fight was Tiffany Von Seuss over Hass Hass. And that was a short notice fight in itself. So that was short notice. Gladstone got in short notice. Injuries, replacements, this tournament wasn't what I thought it was going to be in the beginning. And that just happens. That just happens. But as far as what happened this night, Tiffany Von Soos gets a decision over Jessica Gladstone. Tiffany just, you know, she played at a range where Gladstone could have some offensive success here and there, but Tiffany was able to outscore her. Clearly, again, nothing, you know, exciting, nothing, like, memorable. Just Tiffany was able to get her hands raised. Isis Verbeek and Mill Debbie was a lot, you know, it was a little sloppy. They weren't consistent enough with their offense. I did think Mill Debbie was able to get separation on the cards, but again, it wasn't a fight where you were like, man, I remember when that happened. This didn't happen in this card for the women's fight, just this time. This particular time, it didn't happen. But I can name examples on the top of my head where, you know, the women stole the show. Like Alexa Rufus and Iman Barlow stole the show on their Infusion kickboxing card. So that happens. Just this time, it didn't happen. And Tiffany Von Soos gets a victory over Mill Debbie in the final. And let me tell you something. Despite what I felt about this tournament, the moment Tiffany Von Soos' name was mentioned as the champion, and they put on that big white belt, which was bigger than her torso, to see her emotion, to see her saying, you know, I dreamed as a little girl that I'd win a big, big fight in front of a huge sold-out crowd, because it was sold out by the time she fought. First time, it was filling up. For the first time she fought, second time she fought, it was full. You know, it was really, really cool to see her emotion, to see how excited she was. And again, it was pretty crazy. Like, I mean, I was smiling as I watched it. I've been watching Tiffany for a while. I've gotten to watch her growth as a kickboxer. She's very, very skilled. It was cool watching her get her hands raised. So that was the fight that began the pay-per-view. Go ahead and go into the undercard. We had Sitichai Sitsong Pinong. He gets another victory over Murat Grigoryan. That's three victories in a row. Murat got a split on one of the cards, but for me, this one was a little bit clearer. I think you can make an argument for Murat and some of the other fights. This one was clear for me, that Sitichai was the superior fighter. And it's not just that he lands the clean scores with his boxing and his power kick to the body and the leg. He's now more conscious of not kicking to the body. Kicks there, here, and there, but really focuses on that back leg, your rear leg. He focuses on that a lot, and then he focuses on his counters and his movement, and he's got really sneaky step-up knees. Murat Grigoryan had moments in this fight where I was like, okay, here we go. I think Murat Grigoryan, if I'm remembering correctly, I think I gave him round one, but I thought that after that, it was all Sitichai. He had figured it out. I thought that he took this fight very, very clear. I'm excited what they do for him next, because they had a lightweight tournament and it offered a pretty interesting challenger for down the road. But Sitichai made it clear this time he was the better of the two between him and Murat Grigoryan. But shout out to Murat Grigoryan, who keeps getting back in there, keeps fighting him. He's one of the few guys that are excited to bite down in the mouthpiece, and I'm going to throw enough offense to outscore this guy, because Sitichai's legit. He's really, really tough. So I'm excited about this, and I'm excited that he got this win, and get him back in there right away. They had a four-man tournament again, so they had two in this. So they had the women's tournament, and they had the lightweight men's tournament, which is just amazing. It's amazing to put that together. In this one, we have a very, very skilled Dylan Salvador getting a victory over a up-and-coming, very skilled Anatoly Moiseev. The interesting thing about this bout is, first of all, it was supposed to be Vic Kyria instead of Salvador. Anatoly Moiseev would have, you know, ran through Kyria. Like he's just, I feel like he's way better than Vic Kyria. But when he got Dylan Salvador, I was like, okay, this fight just got interesting. I leaned toward Anatoly to win this fight. But as it went on, first of all, Dylan Salvador showed probably the best guard in kickboxing, because nothing was getting through. Anytime Anatoly put together one of his quick combinations, he hit arms pretty much for all the combination. Like, he could throw four and five, and four and a half would hit the guard. You know, like, that's how tough Dylan Salvador's guard was. He played a clean single kick counter game and moved. He found his boxing, and he just did enough to outscore Salvador. I mean, I thought that he was a little conservative round one, didn't throw as much offense. But man, did Salvador pick it up in two and three. Not crazy, but he picked it up to the level that he likes. It's not the Dylan Salvador that beat Sitichai. He didn't throw offense like that crazy. but he threw offense and he kept Moiseev off. And when you looked after the fight, Moiseev knew he just was a little bit different style from me. He was a little bit slicker than me. And I told him, you know, that's what the kickboxing game is. You come back the second time, you do a little bit better. That's the sport. Anatoly Moiseev didn't go his way this time, but Dylan Salvador, still a young man himself in his mid-20s, he gets the victory there. Hanzi Bekiri gets a victory over Antonio Gomez, another replacement. So Gomez was replacement, as was Salvador being a replacement, if I'm remembering correctly. And Gomez was game, tried his best. Bekiri was just a little bit better when it came to the power shots. He had a brother die of leukemia, I want to say. And he really, you know, he's all tearful and emotional. Like after he got the first round victory, he moves on to go against Dylan Salvador. Very clear victory there for Salvador. Salvador just better than Bekiri, but still a happy moment for Hezny because, you know, his brother had fought in, you know, Glory before. And for him to go through the emotional things that he's doing with his family. Sorry, he's got several brothers here. I hope I don't mix them all up. But it was really cool that he was able to get that first-round victory over Gomez, even though Salvador proved to be the better in the tournament. Dylan Salvador and Sid Tsang Pingnong in France, let's make it happen. It's an easy one to do. They go to France quite often. They do a pretty good audience there. Maybe they hit up Lyon this time, a little bit closer to Salvador's backyard. And I think that they'll sell really well. I went to a It's Showtime event in Lyon, and when I was there, I realized just how much that fan base backs those athletes. Because when, you know, Grigorian fought, if I'm remembering correctly, 19-year-old Grigorian fought Johan Ladon in the 5-round title fight, and Johan won, and the crowd went nuts. You know, that's how much they back their French fighters, in particular. Some of the Nasser Kassim guys in the Lyon area. I think this is where this fight should happen. It'd be the third time they fought, so that's really cool. So Salvador versus Sitichai, make it happen, easy to do. A couple other fights on the card. We had a 3-round decision for Dejani Bestati over Andrzej Brule. Now, Bestati is a guy who I people have him as a prospect. I think that he's got some tools. He's tall for the lightweight division, but he's got a long way to go, and he's got a lot of work to do. He is no Ilias Belaid. He is no Muhammad Jiraiya. He is no Masaki Nori. He isn't one of those guys that you see at a young age where you're like, oh, for sure, this guy's going to be it. You know, he's not. I don't see that in him. Not that I don't see that he's talented, but he's not a Drago Gago type of elite young prospect moving into the elites. He's a very good fighter, very tall. He showed some good skill, really cooled down. He's got that sneaky jumping knee. He scored KOs with it before. He showed me some good skill. But Brule, in the last round of that fight, I thought, really started to pick it up, and Bestati was really trying to get out of the round. Once he made it, he knew that he got the win on the cards. It was good for Brule because you never want to fight in front of your hometown base and don't give him anything to cheer about. Round three gave them something to cheer about. Bestati showed me some skill, definitely showed me some quickness, the sneaky jumping knee, the combination low kick flow. I thought that he showed me some good things, but I'm not as high in him as a prospect as of right now. He's got some work to do. Other fight I'm going to talk about is Hrak Agorin as he goes against Denijel Salaja. And I thought that Hrak Agorin was going to win this fight clear in dominant fashion. And he had some good kickboxing moments, but man, did Salaja have some good kickboxing moments. He was kickboxing pretty clean. Unfortunately, the moment Hrak Agorin walked him down, he put together a combination and he ripped to the body. And that body kick, that body shot put Salaja down. Like, just, it's one of those, just takes the life out of you type of offensive shots. And Salaja was game before that, but that's the sport. I think that he should get back, be proud, be ready to go in there and compete again because he's good. He's a talented guy. He showed me some skill. I thought Hrak Agorin's pressure offense was going to just, you know, have him fighting backwards the whole time and get him out of there. I was wrong. It was very, very clear that he's a very skilled fighter. And Hrak Agorin was a, you know, better fighter, and on this day in particular, once he finally got him to the ropes, he put together an offensive barrage that got Salaja out of there. But if you're Salaja, you did some good things, and even though the fight was like 1 minute, you should think, let me see if I can get back in there and not take the body shot this time. I bet you I can do better. Denijel Salaja, you are a talented guy. I'm excited to see you again. Hrakagorian at welterweight, hey, I wouldn't mind seeing Hrakagorian fight Cedric Dombey for the title. I'm all in for that. But let's go ahead and get those Gregorians fighting as much as possible. They're a lot of fun. Last fight I'm going to talk about is the best fight on the card. Michael Duke versus Daniel Younga. Here's why this fight was special. It was special for a lot of reasons, but it's one of the few fights that actually had storyline. I just didn't feel like they played up the storyline as much because they didn't have to because the fight was so great. But for me, and I talked about it a little bit on last week's podcast show, I was sitting there when they fought the first time with Daniel Younga and Duke, and it looked like Michael Duke just kind of mentally cashed out, and Daniel Younga got the win that day in Chicago. And I'm sitting in the back, and when Duke has that really weird finish to the fight, I was around several guys, and you know, because I was you know working the fight with a fighter. I was there with Brian Foster, and we're sitting there, and we're watching the fights, and then all of a sudden, I see the finish. And Gökhan Saki, and he says it in English, and most of the guys are Dutch back there, but he says, man, he it's not that he's not skilled, it's just he doesn't seem to have the fighter's heart. And that was the big critique of Michael Duke. If you look at some of his fights, as I mentioned before, the way he went down to Terrence Bong, it's not that he didn't take this huge, big, awesome shot. He for sure took a big-time shot. The crazy part about it was that he had this... got up, looked like he was going to try again, and then it looked like he sat down and got himself comfortable so he could take the final count. That's what it looked like. So you look at that, and you look at a string of you know fights like that, and you're like, man, what's going on with this Duke guy? That used to be the critique of him. This fight erased all of that critique, because if there's one thing that Michael Duke for sure showed, it was some freaking heart. So go ahead and jump into the fight. I think there were 5 total downs in the fight, maybe 6. But we go into there, guns blazing, what you thought, defense neglected. We're scoring offense right away. Duke scores a down on a Younga. Younga's got to survive. And then Younga gets up and almost knocks out Duke. Duke stays on his feet, gets out of round one. He's got the victory. Round two, once again, they're going back and forth. They're killing each other. Like, it's just awesome stuff. You can make the I thought Daniel Younga won round two, but I said he would need to win round three or score down to get himself the win in that fight. Daniel Younga goes out there, puts the hands together, scores something big, Duke goes down. Awesome stuff. You're excited. Again, more offensive barrage. He was able to find good clinch knees throughout the fight, but really it was just throwing offense out of it. He catches Duke again. Duke goes down. So now Duke has 2 downs in the 3rd round. So Daniel Younga just stays up. He wins the fight. Michael Duke bites down on the mouthpiece, starts battling back. He kept fighting right hands throughout Daniel Younga's wild shots. And inside of those shots, it was clear Duke was able to punch inside of a Younga's shot. So he was, well, if they both threw hooks, Duke's was a little bit cleaner most of the time. And then he's able to score another down. So then all of a sudden, he's got 2 downs. And Younga's got 2 downs in a 3-round fight. And the crowd's going nuts because they were just trying to kill each other. Plus, it helped that Daniel's from, you know, he's based in Germany. It was awesome. Then we get an extra round. And there were several fights that we saw on the card that we wondered if we were going to see an extra round because we wanted to see them. It was really, really cool that the extra round was done in the fight that we most wanted to see more action. They go out there, they're killing each other all over again. Big offensive stat scores. Duke is getting the better of the exchanges. The young was wild and all over the place and hurt, but he's still fighting and throwing. Nobody's heart was ever put into question. Duke scores a down at the very end of the 4th round to clinch it for him. It was really cool. It was really cool to see him have that moment because this is a guy, like I said before, his fighter heart was questioned. Let all those questions go away now. Michael Duke got this big-time win, and it was awesome. The only other fight in the card that I missed talking about was the Fabio Pinca victory over Musab Amrani. It was called a split. It shouldn't have been a split but because Musab, of course, he's got that style where he'll bite down and just start throwing offense. Fabio Pinca and Musab Amrani would have been you'd consider it fight of the night on any other card because it was a solid fight that had good back and forth action. But I thought that Amrani, despite his wild, you know, big time shots that he throws to try to get guys out of there, I thought Pinca was the cleaner kickboxer throughout. I thought that his movement is the biggest thing. After he scores, he gets away, and Masab's throwing that air a lot of times, or Masab is throwing his punching barrages and not letting anything clean. Pico was able to score clean with pretty much anything he threw. He loves that left leg to the body. He's really focused on that as he's improved. And it's almost like he was a guy who could do a little bit of everything for a period of time. And now in his last few years, he's really big on his left leg to the body and his boxing. I kind of felt like when I watched Liam Harrison back in the day, Liam Harrison had this, I'll go out there and play with everything, you know, play with every tool, beat you in a clinch. I'll just beat you just with, you know, more Muay Thai savvy and, you know, find my moments. And then he lost to Anuwa by low kick. And then after recovering from the injury, he said that he wanted to do some low kicks. So now he's a big time, you know, combination low kick guy or single low kick guy that finds his hands offense later. Harrison developed into a different fighter as he continued to do Muay Thai. In that way, I felt that Fabio Pinca developed into a different fighter from a guy who, again, he could do a little bit of everything, strong. He fights strong. And that was one of the reasons why he beat Sanchai, was because he fought him so strong. I mean, people disagree on that decision or agree on it, whatever. But it's because he fought strong and he didn't let Sanchai have the cute stuff that he scores that he's able to get the victory there. This guy, this version of him, scores much more consistent offense for me. I like that left leg to the body. I like his movement. So shout out to Fabio Pinca, him and Masab Rani. They're the last fight on the card that I didn't mention before. It was a fun night. Like I said, it was really, really fun. I enjoyed pretty much everything except for the final moment because I really did want more. So congratulations to Glory. Good fight card. A lot of buzz. I'm not sure what their pay-per-view numbers were. And I knew this one's going to be tough because it's so easy to find an illegal stream of this. Super easy. I went ahead and paid $30, and I told people online, support the sport. Get out there. You know, drop your 40 if you could. Your 30 if you could. It was cool. I really enjoyed it. It was a very fun moment. So we move on. We move on. It happened in Lebanon, of all places, but Bukau Becimek gets a fight with Andre Kulibin, and he pretty much he fought and he won in autopilot. But it just shows how skilled this guy is. Anytime Kulibin, I'm telling you, anytime he threw a right leg and missed a right kick to the body and head and missed, he just curled up into this position because he knew a power right leg was firing back from Bukau. Bukau really wrecked him with the power leg to the body and to the head, you know, off of counters. He was able to play singles, and anytime they got in a clinch, he was just superior. He'd land knees, throw him to the ground. They fought for, like, some Phoenix promotion title. But it was really interesting that Bukau would be fighting, and pretty much nobody would know what was going on. Glory should consider giving him a call. You know, I mean, I know he makes good money to fight where he's been fighting, in China and so on, but it wouldn't be a bad idea for them to call him because he could add interest to the division. Because if there's one thing that Sedichai is struggling with, he's struggling with anybody caring about him outside of the hardcore contingent. Because if there's one thing that I will tell you, in every sport in the world, your hardcore does not make your sport. It's your casual. It is your hardcore might be the ones that behind it, that love it, that appreciate it. But other than offering, you know, their opinion on, you know, how clear a TIE fighter won in a kickboxing fight, other than offering their opinion there, there's not a huge fan base that goes to the show in Germany to support Sedichai, the best kickboxer in the world, at lightweight in the world. They just, you know, happen to be at certain events, if it's close to them. They just happen to make arguments online. They just happen to catch the fight on some sort of stream. That's not the people that are pushing the sport forward. We need those people to go to the events. Bukau was able to do it all. Bukau was able to win himself over to a European fan base because of the popularity of K1 and the fact that in his offseason with K1, he would always go over and fight in Europe and build a name for himself. You know, like, people forget that. He fought, some of the best guys in the world outside of the Glory promotion, which made him as the champion, outside of the K1 promotion, which made him so much more respectable as a champion. Masato did it early, but really, Masato was all K1, you know, after that. He that was where he's making the money. That's where he's getting his TV opportunities. He was all K1 for a while. That wasn't the case for Bukau. Bukau was a guy who definitely went out and challenged himself. And, you know, went against the Farid Volumes, went against, guys outside of, I say Farid Volume, There's a another example that I'm thinking of. Fred Willems is the name that popped in my mind, but he fought several guys, you know, that were very high level that weren't in the Glory, the K1 brand. And because that happened, he had built his name as this superstar. So when he fought on its Showtime, everybody loved him. They loved seeing him compete, you know. And if you could get that and put it with the Glory brand, pay him the right kind of fight fee, you could have somebody in your lightweight picture that people in the world know. And even if he loses, at least your champion beats someone that people know, and then they can follow him a little bit better. It's almost to Sitichai's benefit that they bring Bukau in. In particular, since Glory said there's a chance that they're going to do Thailand, you really got to consider bringing this guy in. Even if you don't put him in your title picture and use him for super fights, you got to consider bringing Bukau in. He's still a star. Other than that, I think, you know, I mean, I was torn as I was doing this because part of me was like, do I want to talk about the Bellator event? Because I know some of you guys haven't seen it, and some of the fights just happened to emerge on, you know, my, they emerged on my Facebook. So I just, somebody in the crowd with a phone or something like that, you're scrolling down and you get to see some of the KOs, whatever. I want to leave that card for you guys to watch and enjoy. I don't want to get into it too much. So I'll just be really, really vague, and I'll talk about the results more than I will talk about like the actual action. The only action I think I'll bring up is, it's tough. I don't want to give stuff away, but I don't know how much of a choice I got because, I'll go ahead and go into some of it. So basically all the A-sides won. The guys who they are really supporting, really pushing, the guys that they wanted to have success had success for them that night. So Georgia Petrosian gets a stoppage victory over Jordan Watson. I'm telling you, he's just so exceptionally skilled. And when the right hand gets cracking, I mean, he cracked with both hands left and right. But the timing that he has on the right hook, it produced some of his best downs and some of his best, you know. He is a guy who's been skilled, elitely skilled for quite some time, still respected throughout the world as one of the best fighters in the world, still could be considered the best fighter in the world at lightweight. Him and Sadashai got to do it. I would love for them to fight. He's that skilled. I want to see how they do against each other. Petrosian's elite. He's special. And he was able to beat a very good, very game Jordan Watson, young up-and-coming star in the sport, who is, you know, heading into his mid-20s, been around it for a while. He just needs more opportunities to fight high-level guys in kickboxing, whereas he gets the opportunity in Muay Thai. He just hasn't had it in kickboxing. So I definitely want to see more of him down the road. But, man, how special is Georgia Petrosian as he gets this done in Florence? Joe Schilling on that card, he was able to get a victory that night. Again, I won't go into it. I want you guys to see the kickboxing fights for yourself tomorrow. They also had Kevin Ross fight. They also had Denise Kielholz. She beats Gloria Piertori. I'm sorry, I hope I pronounced that right. I'm just kind of doing off the top of my head. But the biggest thing that was cool about this is Denise Kielholz beat her earlier this year. I say Denise's because that's how it was pronounced by Jermaine when I was talking to those two in Holland. But Kielholz, very special, very elite kickboxer, good athlete, combination flow, gets in your face. She should have won the first time she fought Gloria. Clearly should have won that fight. But the judges that night, they went for flash. They went for the flash kicks of Gloria, even though the consistent kickboxing scores were coming from Denise. And Kielholz goes into the backyard, goes into Italy, is able to beat Gloria for that, you know, Bellator title at 125 pounds. And that's really cool. I was really excited for her because she is a talented girl, really, really talented. And it's tough to bounce back from losses that don't go your way. Even tougher when you lose and then you got to go try to get the victory in their hometown. She did that. And, of course, I tweeted it the other day, Hezdy Herkes, the husband. I tweeted that there's a great picture of him just going crazy for her, like cheering in the corner. She's getting her hands raised. And I tweeted it. I was like, well, this is a supportive husband. And I swear that tweet's been retweeted so many times. I just didn't even think about that picture being that popular. But it's really cool to see her get that victory. So I want to thank everybody again for following the podcast. I want to thank you all for supporting me and for supporting kickboxing, man. I mean, I love it. I love the sport, and I'm always grateful when people sit down, they've got a word, they want to ask me about anything to deal with kickboxing. I've always got time for you. So if you ever ask me a question on Twitter, I'm going to answer it. You ever send me a DM, I'm going to answer it. Find me on Facebook, you send me something, I'm going to answer it. I love kickboxing, and it was a fun weekend despite the ending of Badr Hari and Rico Verheeren. I can't wait to see what's going on in next year. Next year's episode, or next week's episodes, will really focus on fights of the year, fight of the year, that kind of stuff, whatever. A fighter of the year. It's going to focus in that direction. I'm probably going to bring in a guest to talk about what's going down in Thailand, because this was my first part of this year. I started really well talking about things going down in Thailand, but the second part of the year, I did not. It was a lot tougher for me to get the time to watch the high-level Thai fights. So I'm going to get my study on, and then I'm going to bring in somebody, of course, to talk about the year in review of guys like Meng Thai, who won the Fight of the Year for Lumpini Stadium. I'm going to really focus on some of the elites. We'll have something special for that. I'll do my breakdown of what I felt happened in the kickboxing year, Fight of the Year, Fights of the Year, that kind of stuff, whatever. And tell you guys what to look forward to and get excited about next year, because Glory's already doing their thing. They've already got two cards announced for next year already, and that's what we want, man. We want the consistency, and they have really delivered in that way. So God bless everybody. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast, and I'm going to upload this and then go get in line to go watch Star Wars, because I'm a Star Wars fan. So peace.